I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Very moving story of a young woman, or a woman who lived in Ohio for most of her life, but moved to New York after she graduated from college to work in the publishing industry and had a breakdown. The book is about her struggle with depression, her treatment for depression, and the help of a gifted therapist and medication and a beautiful, beautiful dog whose name is Bunker, or was Bunker. Bunker is no longer with us, but our guest has another dog now. As a matter of fact, she's got other animals because she's an animal lover. This bond between woman and dog, and we've talked about this before on the show, but this book really tells the story of the bond that she had with Bunker and how Bunker really helped her from very deep clinical depression. The book is Dog Medicine, How My Dog Saved Me From Myself, and we're going to be talking about it with our guest, Julie, and welcoming your phone calls as well. Julie now lives in Northern California with her husband, two daughters, and she has pets, and I believe she has another dog now, so we'll talk about that doggy. If you would like to join our conversation, I'll bet some of you have similar stories of how dogs have carried you through some pretty hard times in your lives. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter, and that is @KDunnShow. Julie, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me, Kathleen.
Our great pleasure, and thanks for writing your story, too, which is not an easy one to write. Man, when you write about falling into the depths of depression at the beginning of the book, you describe that so achingly and so completely that I really got a sense of what it's like to be suffering from clinical depression in a way that I've never understood before.
Thank you. You know, depression is a hard thing to write about, because a lot of times it's absence and it's nothingness. And so, you know, it took a while to figure out how to enter. But that really means a lot to me. Thank you that you could relate.
Yeah, it was very, very beautiful. And your mom came and got you from that apartment in New York. You went back to Ohio where you had spent your life and had a few difficult weeks. But let's jump right into the dog, because you came from a family who loved dogs. You write also about all the dogs you had when you were a child, and your parents had a dog when you moved home, right?
Yes, they did. They had a Cocker Spaniel. Mm-hmm.
And you decided that, or who was it who initially, I can't remember, suggested that maybe a dog might be helpful to you? Other things were as well, but a dog might be important to you. Was that you? I know your mom was looking at the want ads.
Well, that was me. That was very much me, because, you know, all my life, you know, when things were scary and when I felt unsafe, I would take the dog and go to my room. And that was a place that I knew I could potentially turn to in this time of trouble. And so when I mentioned it to my mom, you know, it was one of the first hopeful things that I'd said since I came home. And so my parents were all for it.
Mm-hmm. You had a really difficult childhood. Your brother was really mean to you and physically mean to you. You had some horrendous incidents.
Yeah. 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 We had a rough, sibling rivalry, if that's what you want to call it. It was a physically and emotionally difficult, and some call abusive, relationship. And, you know, it was challenging, because as a child, I didn't know that that was unusual. I thought that this was how brothers and sisters interacted. But I also very deeply looked up to my brother. And so what he thought about me, I thought about myself. And so that became one of the sources of my depression and my negative, sort of constant negative self-thoughts, mm-hmm. self-abuse.
Before we go to wonderful Bunker, you did try several different therapists. It was obvious you needed to talk some things out and try some medications. But it was interesting to me that you found a couple, before you found the right person, you went through others who weren't really probably going to be as of much help to you as the one who you ultimately decided on. Is that unusual for people to go to a couple different therapists before they find somebody with whom they can click?
I don't think so. You know, the person I first went to was a psychiatrist, and she kind of had me in, and she's the one who could prescribe whether I needed medication. And then the therapist that I saw, you know, was the next person, and she was a great fit. I do think that a lot of times, you know, you have to find the person that you feel most comfortable with, that, you know, you relate to, that you feel like they understand you. And I don't think it's uncommon to have to look around a little bit.
Mm-hmm. And it was the psychiatrist who put you on medication. Did you stay on that for a long time? Zoloft, was it?
Yeah, she put me on Zoloft. At first I was like, no, you know, because this was 1996 and I had never heard of, you know, any SSRI or any kind of brain medication, and it was scary to me.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of thought, well, what do I have to lose? And I took it, and I have tried to go off of it probably 7 or 8 times in my life. I'm 42 now, and one of the last times I tried to go off, when I tried to go back on, because I couldn't make it, it didn't work for the first. I had to switch, and I thought, why am I messing with this?
Mm-hmm.
And so I have decided I am going to take this the rest of my life, and if this is what it takes for me to stay alive, by all means, I'm going to do it. You know, I treat my depression like any chronic disease, and I take care of it, and I take care of myself.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's probably true back in the 90s that we didn't talk that much about clinical depression. We didn't talk very much about mental health then either, really, did we?
No, not at all. I'd never heard of depression as a diagnosable disease. I didn't know what it was. I don't think my parents had either. You know, it was most certainly not something that was in the public lexicon the way that it is now. So I thought, I was really deeply ashamed when I got the diagnosis. And I don't think that that's the case now with most people, but then I thought, you know, wow, like, I'm really sick. There's something wrong with me. And the fact is, yeah, I was really sick, and there was something wrong with me, but there was also a way to get better. And, you know, the whole shame around mental illness is so vast and heavy. And, you know, I feel like part of my mission with this book is to peel that away.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to do that.
No.
We really don't. There are ways to be well and to be, you know, honest about what we've gone through. And that's been my experience with this book, is that, you know, when you tell your truth, people are so grateful, and they come to you and they say, me too. You told my story.
Yeah, I would imagine that you told a lot of stories, and it's important for people who have been through that to read them. And your parents sound, God bless them, like good-hearted souls. Your mom couldn't really confront you directly, but she was obviously worried about you in her own way. Your dad was maybe a little more demonstrative with his worry, hugging you. But they wanted to do what was best for you. They probably didn't know what was going on either.
Exactly. I mean, and that was one of the challenges of writing this book, is that, you know, when you first start sort of mining your family history, you can think, well, they did this wrong and they did that wrong, and sure, but in my particular case, and I think it's true for a lot of families, there were a lot of things that they did right, and they tried really, really hard. And so that was actually a really beautiful discovery for me in the writing process, to look back and think, you know, I was suffering so much, and I was also really deeply loved.
Yes.
And, you know, it may be hard to sometimes remember that, but I look back and I think, you know, I was taken care of. As much as flawed as they were and as complicated as our family dynamics were, like every family, you know, at the basis of my family was a really deep love and devotion to helping each other and being there for each other.
Mm. What's interesting is you put it about the same day, actually, that the day that you were really hitting rock bottom, that your buddy Bunker was being born.
Yeah. You know, that was an incredible connection that I made as I was writing the book. I didn't ever really think about it, you know, when it happened. I didn't think about the timing. And then I look back at old journals, and I look back at, you know, I have his AKC records, and a pinpoint, I couldn't believe it. The day he was born was the day I collapsed. And, you know, things like that, when you start to mine your personal history and really pay attention, you start to notice these kind of beautiful cosmic things that kind of make you feel like we're all connected and less alone, and that if you search, you can find a lot of beauty in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's go to the day that you found him. You even include some dog training advice in the book, which I found very helpful. I really did. We'll have to get to that later. How did you find him? Tell me about the first meeting, because it was a this-is-my-dog kind of moment.
Absolutely, yes, it was. So my mom had, you know, looked in the classifieds in the newspaper because there was no internet yet, and we went to two different family breeders, and we went to the first one, and they had these beautiful white goldens, and they were in a pen, and they jumped around, and they were all excited, and they hopped out of the pen, and then they ran away, and honestly, I was so sensitive at that time, and I felt a little bit rejected by the puppies, and
aww.
I thought, this isn't this is what I'm looking for. So I told my mom, let's go to the next litter. And we went to the next place, and we pulled up to this farm in this tiny little hamlet in Alexandria, Ohio. And they had, like, there was like a big white farmhouse and a crescent of trees behind the farmhouse. And this woman comes out of the house after we parked and got out of the car. And then she put her fingers in her mouth, and she whistled. And all these dogs came running out of the woods, and the puppies, too, and the parents and siblings. And I thought, this is the best, like, puppyhood ever. They're free. And so my mom started chatting with the breeder, and I kind of wandered off. And one of the puppies spotted me and just came up to me, as calm as could be, sat down at my feet, and looked straight up at me like, there you are. I've been waiting for you. You know, it was that kind of thing. So I picked him up. He was not wiggling. He was, you know, very content to be in my arms. And he licked my nose, and I thought, there you are. That's the one. And that was the first day of the rest of our lives together.
And you named him after the first dog your parents had?
Yeah. Yeah, so my parents' first dog was named Bunker Hill. And, you know, when I was trying to think of a name, I was feeling very indebted to my parents because, you know, my mom had come to New York and saved me, and my dad had really tried to talk to me and help me, and he took me on a fishing trip. And it was, they were really working hard to help, and I wanted to pay homage to them. But then I also looked up, you know, the Battle of Bunker Hill just to sort of see what the significance was there. And it was the first battle where the colonials thought that they had lost the battle, but they had a little bit of hope afterwards that maybe they could win the war, the Revolutionary War. And I thought, all right, if that's not fitting, I don't know what is. And so his name was Bunker Hill.
And he got you up early in the morning. You'd been sleeping in until 1:30 in the afternoon. He got you up 5 a.m., 6 a.m.?
Yes, yeah. Well, and he did that, and, you know, there were... the first day that I woke up with him by my side was the first day of my life, and I don't know what factors it, you know, came together to make this happen, but it was the first morning of my life where I woke up and I didn't feel this really heavy dread. Mm. For me, you know, when I'm suffering and my depression is bad, when I wake up, I just, my first thought is, oh, no, I don't want this day. I don't want to get up. I don't want to do anything. And this was the first morning that I noticed that it wasn't there, which was a miracle because I had never noticed that it was there. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yes.
I didn't know it was there until it was gone.
Right.
And I felt hope upon waking, and it was like, this must be how not depressed people feel. You must wake up and think, I'm ready for today. What's going to happen today? You know, it was the first morning of my life where I thought, I might actually be okay. I might be okay with this dog and with medication and with help. Yeah, and he got me outside. He got me out in the yard watching the sunrise, and that was super healing for me.
And he seemed to, people who perhaps haven't had dogs, well, that maybe they understand this with another animal, but dogs do this so well, that the two of you just had this taking in the world together. You know, he'd be on his back kind of squirming, looking at the stars, and you'd be on your back looking at the stars, and there were the two of you right next to each other looking at the stars. It was just like he knew, well, I like this too. I like what my mom likes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and, you know, there's a chapter in the book that's called Dog Medicine. And that was the first chapter where, you know, our connection to me was cemented, because I'd had him for about 3 days and I started to feel depressed again, like the real heavy blackness. And he was across the room. I was sitting on the couch and he walked over and he sat on my feet and he leaned against my shins and he just looked at me. Mm. And it was like he was saying, well, I'll be with you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't care if you're down. And I noticed that you're down. And just the fact that I wasn't alone, that I had something to touch, something that didn't judge me, that I didn't have to do any explaining with him, you know, the way I did with my parents. Like, what's wrong? And why, you know,
right.
Nothing. I didn't have to do any of that with him. And because of that, and because I was able to be as sad as I needed to be and he would be with me, it started to lift.
So tell us, let's just move briefly, because this will be of interest to people who just got puppies in the last couple of weeks. I had never heard of this training exercise before. You took him in the backyard with a very long leash, and to get him to walk next to you instead of roaming all over. Where did you learn about dog training, and what advice could you give us that's particularly helpful, Julie?
Oh, I love it. Well, so it was from a book. It's a book called Good Owners, Great Dogs, and it's by Brian Kilcommons, and I've used it with all my dogs. And, yeah, that method is essentially you have them on a very long leash. You don't pay any attention to them. You don't talk to them. You don't look at them. You kind of keep them in your peripheral vision, and you walk in the biggest square that you can. You just walk, and you stop at the corner, and then you turn, and then you – and the puppy – will be like a fly on the end of a fishing line, popping over here and popping over there. And if you feel them falling and really pulling on the leash, you slow down until they get back up. But what they learn with several rotations in that square is that if they stay right by your side, they're going to be okay.
Mm.
They're not going to get yanked, and they're not going to, you know, have problems. And so, and actually, you know, when I do my readings on this tour, my mom thought it was hysterical that I was in my backyard dragging my dog around. And so she got out the video camera and she videotaped us.
Oh,
and
she
I have the footage of me doing this with Bunker, and it's a beautiful, it's like 4 minutes long.
Oh.
And what you see is at the beginning, he's distracted by her because he can smell her, and he's distracted by birds and by the grass. And slowly you can see him start to realize that if he stays by me, he's going to be okay. And it's this beautiful, like, meditation on our bonding. And you watch it happen. It's really, I'm really, really grateful to my mom for, you know, thinking it was hilarious and taping me.
Yeah. And you stood by him. We'll get to that story, too. He needed you in a big way.
Yeah.
We're going to welcome phone calls to our guest this hour. It's a lovely book. Maybe some of you have had a chance to read it. Recently released, Dog Medicine, How My Dog Saved Me From Myself. Julie Barton is the author. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Some of us, of course, have felt rescued by our pets, really rescued by our pets, so it will resonate with many of you, I'm sure. And we'll take phone calls and open this up to you whenever you'd like to join us. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Julie Barton is our guest. Her book, beautiful book, Dog Medicine, How My Dog Saved Me From Myself. I'm looking at Bunker's eyes right now, and they're soulful, mighty soulful eyes. So we're talking about how pets can help rescue us, and her story of clinical depression, and her family, and certainly her dog, Bunker, rescuing her. Our number is 800-486-8655. There's so many of these stories, Bunker being born on the day you hit bottom, Melissa calling you an old classmate of yours when you were starting to think that maybe it was time to move out of your parents' house, and she's calling you from Seattle, of all places. That was pretty remarkable, wasn't it, Julie?
Yes, and people said, did that really happen? Like, why did she call you? And I said, I don't know. I mean...
Right.
She was a friend who was always good about keeping in touch. You know, we wrote letters during college and kept in touch now and then. And so it wasn't a huge surprise that she called. But, you know, looking back, it was one of those phone calls that I'm so glad I answered.
Right. But you were questioning, why is she calling me now? Did somebody set her up on this? Does she
Absolutely.
Really want me to move to Seattle to be there? And you had to come up with answers because, you know, it was an offer that you had to take seriously.
Yeah. So she called and said, you know, I'm moving into a house with these two guys, And, you know, then she said, well, why don't you come out here? Because I said, I'm in Ohio. I don't know what I'm going to do next. And she said, why don't you come out? And I was like, okay. And I thought, well, is she depressed out there in the rain? And why does she want me? And then I thought, well, she probably doesn't want me to come. She just was being nice. And then, you know, and she said, well, you know, why don't you think about it for a few days? But I think it'd be great. She was all positivity and kindness and generosity.
Yes.
And she still is. She's still my very best friend.
Oh.
And that phone call changed my life because I said yes.
You said yes. And you also had, fortuitously, an aunt who lived there who loved animals.
Yes, yes. My aunt in Seattle is a kindred spirit and is a huge animal lover. And I always felt very close to her when I was a kid because I didn't know an adult who loved animals the way that I did, except for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was supremely sensitive to me and kind of understood the dynamics in my family when it seemed like a lot of other people didn't. And she's a therapist, and so she kind of, you know, she took care of me.
Mm. And now we're really realizing the importance, as we didn't when you were going through all of this. All of a sudden, we realize dogs are amazingly important in so many parts of life, for grieving, for young people who are bullied, who are having problems in school, for hospice. All of those areas have just opened up since you started with Bunker, right?
Absolutely. I thought I was the only one at the time who was this, you know, dependent upon her dog, emotionally dependent. You know, going to work, I had to get a job once I moved to Seattle, and going to work was really stressful. I thought, how am I going to be without him, and how is he going to be? Is he going to be okay? And,
yeah.
You know, it was challenging, but, you know, I did it. But it's so heartening for me to see people using dogs for veterans that are suffering from PTSD, for people who are, you know, in hospice. And, you know, there's something incredibly healing about an animal. It's like a way of bringing in a little bit of the magic of the natural world into our homes. And they have so much to teach us.
Yes, they do. 800-486-8655 is our number. Ron is our first caller. Hi, Ron.
Hi, Kathleen. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ron.
Yes. I just, as I turned on the show and I was listening about how dogs interact with people, I have a therapy dog that I have registered for about 2 years now.
Oh, great.
And actually, I must admit that you're the one that had a guest on. This has been probably a couple years ago. And you had the therapy dogs, a therapy dog guest on. And that kind of inspired me to take our dog, Jack, and get him registered.
Oh, that's so good to hear, Ron.
Yeah, it really does make a difference. And just the dog that we have, our Jack, is from a pound. And when your guest was describing how she found her dog, it sounds very similar to our dog. We got our dog from a shelter. He came into the house, and dogs don't normally stare at things. You know, they see that it's threatening. And he just looked me in the eye and laid down on the floor. And I knew that was it. He chose us.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't choose him, really. And I take him now to two nursing homes and also high school. Actually a grade school,
mm-hmm.
and use them in reading programs and also in the nursing homes. And the big, I guess the mystery that I see, especially in nursing homes and the memory care units, is how people who don't respond to other people or to their surroundings, as soon as a dog comes into the room, it's amazing how they respond to an animal.
Mm-hmm.
I see it happen time and time again, and I can't explain it, but it's pretty incredible. It really is.
Oh, Ron, I'm so glad you were listening and called. It's wonderful to hear. I'll be with you one of these days with my therapy dog or dogs. I'm not quite there yet, but I certainly will be. It is true, Julie, and it's true for you in your experience, that Bunker could touch you in ways that nobody else could. How does that happen?
You know, I think Ron is right that it's a mystery. You know, I don't know. I think part of it is that there's no expectation from a dog. They don't expect you to be socially, appropriate. They don't expect you to take care of them in a way, an emotional way that people do. And that presents a bit of a challenge. And I love that story about, people in memory care and how they don't respond to people, but they respond to an animal. And I feel like there's a little bit of magic there. I don't know.
Yeah. Thank you, Ron.
Thank you, Ron.
Yeah. All the best to you. So a lot of the story isn't easy. Your life hasn't been easy, but you're traveling to Seattle, and I just felt for you. I can imagine what this must have been like. Here's this dog who's helped you so enormously, and then you have to help the dog because Bunker's not doing very well.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That was hard.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know how much we want to say, but, when I took him, to the vet because he was having some problems, and the vet, was very dismissive and nonchalant and said, this is really bad. I suggest you put him down. And I just was, said, absolutely not. What do I have to do?
Mm-hmm.
And I did feel that if he died, I would die. Mm. I was that dependent on him and not ready to leave without, if I were had to live without him at that point. It was really scary.
Yeah, but everybody rallied. Your friends rallied, helped you get money.
Yeah.
And Bunker lived for a good long time, right?
He did, 11 years.
Yeah. Let's go to Heather in Madison. Hi, Heather.
Hi. I just wanted to thank you, first of all, for having the guest on the show, and then also thank you, the author. I missed the beginning of the show, so I missed your name. I'm sorry.
Julie. Her name is Julie.
Julie, thank you so much for writing this book and sharing your story. I can't wait to read it. I myself suffer from clinical depression and have suffered on and on for over 20 years. And just this past December, my husband and I rescued a dog. His name is Stewie. And sometimes Stewie is the only reason I can get myself out of bed in the morning. And I just thank you for sharing your story. I can't thank you enough. So.
And tell, don't leave yet, Heather. Tell us about Stewie.
Oh, he's a schnoodle.
Uh-huh.
And we've rescued him from a humane society. We're his fourth owner in 4 years, but we are his forever home.
Oh.
So playful and so loving, loves to cuddle, and is just loves to give kisses, loves to snuggle up at night. He's just, like you said, he helps me get through a lot of days, so...
Heather, thank you so much for calling, and I'm so glad that Stewie found you.
I am, too. And there are a lot of dogs out there to be found, too, aren't there, Julie? There really are.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's so many dogs that need homes. And, Heather was saying that they're Stewie's fourth home. We're our current dog's fourth home as well. There are a lot of dogs that, for various reasons, get given up, and they need a new home, and they need love and consistency, and there's so many dogs. And I did get Bunker from a breeder, and I don't judge people who do get their dogs from a breeder, but there are so many wonderful dogs that need a rescue. They really do.
Thanks, Heather, so much. It must have been hard. Your mom knew that you needed to, and you were college educated. It was time for you to be out on your own, but you had suffered such a breakdown that it must have been hard. And I thought it was brave of your mom, too, when you write in the book about how she knew that you had to go and her helping you get to Seattle, but also encouraging you to pick yourself up and take Bunker and let's go do this.
Absolutely. I as a mother myself now, I can't imagine how hard that was for her to say,
yes,
I think this isn't the right, our home is not the right place for you. I mean, how selfless, right? For her to say, I think you need to go find your own thing. I knew at the time that she was right, and I also knew that it was a gift. And for her to accompany me on the journey, we drove cross country together, was the biggest gift. And she's always been so encouraging of me, even when I write a memoir about her and our family.
And I must ask you more about your brother, because that's a tough part of the book to read. You went through some horrible times with him. Did he ever go into therapy? I know that you have reconciled, but I can't imagine how that happened, to tell you the truth, because it was really bad when you were growing up, Julie.
Yeah. He is a well person now. He has done a lot of work. And, you know, one of the biggest unknowns when I was writing this book was whether he would be okay with me publishing it.
I'll bet.
You know, I would have understood if he said, no way. But not only is he okay with it and gave me his blessing, as he said, you know, I think we might help some people, because sibling violence and sibling, you know, abuse is a real issue that, is not really talked about. And so I feel enormously lucky that he has, you know, let this story be out in the world. And, you know, I tell everybody that when this happened, you know, the things that happened, these really harrowing scenes in the book, he was also a child.
Right.
You know, he was 11, 12, 13 years old. He was older in some of them, but still he was also a child who was suffering.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because he was a bad person. It's because he was working through his own really difficult emotions and not knowing how to deal with them.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there are lessons as well for parents in this book, because your parents did know that some bad things were happening between the two of you, but is it too little to say that they just thought it was, well, this is sibling rivalry? They must have known that something serious was happening when you were physically hurt.
You know, I don't know that they thought it was that serious.
Oh.
I really don't. I think if they did think it was that serious, they most certainly would have done something.
Mm-hmm.
My mom only had sisters, and she said they never really physically fought. And my dad was an only child, and so they didn't really have a reference point. They thought this must be how, you know, brothers are, and boys are rough, and, you know, this is just sibling rivalry. And, you know, I think that they just didn't know. And also, a lot of it happened when they weren't looking. My brothers was smart and would do it often when they weren't around.
Hmm. But he even came to your call for help, responded to it when you needed money for Bunker, wasn't it?
He did, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I had to do this harrowing surgery with Bunker, and I had, you know, no money. I was temping at a law firm, and my friends helped me raise money. And then, you know, shortly before the surgery, I got a letter from him with a check in the mail saying, I know Bunker will be okay. You know, and things like that just sort of were slowly starting to help me heal. And the thing, too, is that, you know, when you're a child and you're being given really negative messages, you take them on. It's a part of sort of trauma indoctrination. You decide, well, if my brother says that nobody likes me and that I'm ugly, that must be the truth. And so you start to think that about yourself without any, you know, awareness that you're doing that. And so I had to untangle myself from that little girl, you know, and forgive her for wanting her brother to love her.
Aww.
And be kind to her. And that was that. Getting that card and that check was one of the first times where I saw that was a possibility.
Mm. So it's interesting you mentioned that maybe we wouldn't even publish it if he thought strongly about this. You are writing about your family, and you're writing about them. They're alive, and this is some pretty personal information. Was that hard to put all of this in print and see the book come out and go, oh, here's my family, and they're going to read about all of this? And most of it is absolutely, they're wonderful people, but there are some instances, particularly with your brother, that aren't, you know, very pleasant on his part, to say the least.
Yes, it was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying.
Was it?
But also, you know, my parents and my brother are my biggest cheerleaders. They really are. And I think it's sort of, you know, it's one of those things. It's complicated, right? You know, we're a family that we have failed each other, and we have also saved each other.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's not true for every family, you know, I'd be surprised. You know, we all are complicated, and we make mistakes, and we do things wrong. And for a long time, I focused on what was wrong with my family. And as I started the process of writing this book, I went, well, wait a minute. They showed up for me. There was a lot of love and care there. And so, you know, starting to focus on that, just, you know, in equal measure, if not more, was really healthy and helpful for me. But yes, publishing a book about your family is scary, and I'm very lucky that my family is so wildly supportive.
Yeah. Well, and when I was thinking about your family right at the beginning, I thought, thank goodness you had your mom to call.
Yeah.
Or you may not have made it, right?
No, I would not have made it without my mom. No, there's no question. She absolutely was my knight in shining armor. She got in her car and drove straight to Ohio. I mean, she knew me well enough, we're close enough, that she knew I was already on, you know, shaky ground before this happened. And when she got the call, she knew she had to get here right away. And my whole life I've known that about both my parents, that if I need them, they are there, no questions. If I say, I need you to get on a plane right now and come out and help me, and they'd say, I'll be there next flight. And that's, you know, that's a real gift. Not everybody has that, and I feel really blessed.
Yeah, it's good to have somebody in our lives, parents or not, where we can make that kind of call. Back to Bunker for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that first litter of puppies that you saw and the second litter. Can we all be this lucky when we're looking for a dog with whom we can have that kind of wonderful bond, that incredible love? Do we have to be very careful when we select that animal, do you think?
I do.
You do?
I do think. I tell people, wait for the spark.
Oh.
Wait for the spark. But that said, my current dog, I did not spark with. And he was a challenge at first, and we've had him for 7 years or so, and he's finally calmed down, and he's so attached to me now, but it took a long time for him to trust me. And so, you know, first of all, I don't prescribe getting a dog as a cure for depression at all.
Right.
I think that if you're an animal, if when you were a child, a dog brought you solace, it may be something to think about. But maybe when you're a child, you know, playing piano brought you solace, or, you know, whatever it is that brought you that kind of deep, passionate hope, that's what you got to go for. And I do say, if you see, you know, when you go looking for a dog, just wait. Don't get the first cute face unless you feel a real spark, and you'll know. You'll know.
Hmm. It's really good that you overlooked, because golden retriever puppies are hard to walk away from. You know, you just get the first one you look at, right?
They're so ridiculously cute and clumsy and just adorable.
Yeah, they're absolutely adorable. Scotty had his golden retriever, and we have a picture on our Facebook page. Is that video available? Can we put that on our page, or is that hard to get that your mom took? I really want to see the two of you.
I know. Well, you know, I'm going to put it on my... I'll put it on my site when I get back from the tour.
Oh, good, good.
Yeah,
okay.
Which will be in a few weeks. And in the meantime, if people want to come out and see me, they'll see it in the reading. So
excellent.
I'll put it on when I get home.
Okay, excellent. We're going to welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is Julie Barton. Julie's book is Dog Medicine, How My Dog Saved Me From Myself. And there's a beautiful picture of her dog, Bunker, her golden retriever, on the front, and a beautiful picture of Julie in the pages of the back of the book as well. She was suffering. She almost didn't make it. She was a graduate of college, grew up in Ohio, was working for a book publisher in New York City, had an apartment, and had a breakdown, and called her mom, who knew she was in deep trouble. She brought her back to Ohio, and she started the process of healing, aided greatly by the dog, the golden retriever puppy, with whom she fell in love, and he fell in love with her, and it helped her, in addition to a great therapist, to make her whole. Not that it hasn't been a struggle all the time, but this dog was an exceptional dog. And it's that story and the story of Julie's moving on and getting stronger. And she's now a mom. She has two daughters herself, living in Northern California, published this book, and has another dog and other pets as well. She's going to be tomorrow, actually, if you want to see her. She's at 7 o'clock at Boswell Book, and that's here in Milwaukee. Oh, that's not tomorrow. It's Friday. I'm sorry. I was thinking it was Thursday, but it's not. It's Wednesday, and so it's Friday, this Friday, the 22nd at 7 at Boswell Book. So we're welcoming phone calls. If you've had this kind of experience with an animal in your life, please call. If you need recommendations of how you should be looking for an animal, I thought it was interesting that she said, wait for the spark. Wait for the spark. Our number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. Facebook is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. 800-486-8655 is our number. I want to talk about some of the men in your life, too, because you were you had this bad relationship in New York, although the guy stayed in your life intermittently for some time, and people that you would meet, relationships aren't always easy. How did the dog factor into the relationship? Was it a case of love me, love my dog?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I gotcha. I said, if you don't love my dog, goodbye. But yeah, you know, my part of the reason, so, you know, my relationships before Bunker were unhealthy, that sort of desperate, please love me, please call me. You know, a lot of my relationships were like that. And after I got Bunker, you know, it kind of changed because I didn't need the connection as much because I had him. And then when I met my husband, you know, it was very interesting because having my background in suffering from depression and having very low self-esteem, I was in relationships with people who weren't necessarily kind to me and who didn't say what they'd do what they said they were going to do. And when I met this man who was kind and showed up and easy and calm, and he liked me for me, I thought, well, this is boring. And you know, I thought, well, I don't think this is love. And then the more I would go on long meandering walks with Bunker and thinking about it, and Bunker loved him, the more I thought about it, I thought, well, maybe that is love. Maybe love isn't just, you know, this heart-pounding electricity. Maybe it's, you know, that at the beginning, but also maybe it's somebody being kind and really connecting with you and doing, you know, showing up and being reliable and thoughtful. So I think having him sort of helped me be centered enough to see that this was a potentially healthy relationship.
I'm glad I asked that question. Karen in Appleton, hi.
Hi. My job before I retired was a marriage and family therapist, and my specialty was anxiety and depression related to trauma. And I just want to congratulate you on how successfully you have handled a really tough issue.
Thank you.
Karen, did you use or do you know therapists who use animals in their practices?
Yes, and not too far from Appleton, there is a place where the kids who are more severely affected can go for on-horse therapy.
Oh.
Where they, you know, they learn to be calmer and so forth. There are resources in the area. Some of the therapists had therapy dogs.
Right.
That's wonderful. And so those worked really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I grew up with a dog. She slept with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a wonderful thing to have that kind of a relationship.
Yep.
Yes, it is. Thank you, Karen, so much. Let's
Thank
go to Sarah in Milwaukee. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I have bipolar disorder, and I do have a dog and a cat that helped me greatly. Actually, it's my cat that I seems to help me more with my disorder. And my cat's 19, and she's declining. And I know your guest lost Bunker, and I was wondering how she dealt with that, because I just feel that if my cat dies that I'm going to die too, because I'm not going to want to live anymore because I just love my pet so much.
But you have a dog too, Sarah, right?
Yes, I do.
All right.
Sarah, I know exactly how you feel. And also, a lot of people come to me and say their cats are this for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, when Bunker goes, how am I going to survive?
Right.
He was with me for 11 years. And when he passed away, you know, I won't lie and say that, you know, it was fine. It felt like the colors on the earth changed. Everything just changed. And that was scary. But I knew that his love for me meant that I had to keep going. And I had to take what he taught me and the kind of coping mechanisms that he gave me, like sitting down, especially with a cat, you know, sitting down and breathing deeply, you know, playing with something, you know, sitting and doing something that brings you joy. I thought Bunker would want me to do my best to be happy. And, you know, you can try to think the same thing about your cat. You know, it's one of the hardest things, and you will not be alone. You know, if you reach out to people and say, I lost my cat and I'm devastated, you know, when that happened with Bunker, and especially after I published this book, I thought people are going to think I am nuts. You know, I have a severe mental illness, and the thing that saved me was my dog. And boy, was I wrong. People have come from every corner of the world and said that this is their story, too.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, you need to read the book.
Yes, I'm definitely going to get the book. It sounds inspirational. And mm-hmm. I'm isolated. Because of my illness, I lost my job in 2004, and I pretty much keep to myself. Mm. So it's been my pets that have kept me alive.
Yeah.
But anyways, thank you very much.
Thanks,
Sarah. Thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate it.
Jackie is next in Madison. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for the great story, Julie. One of the happiest days of my life was when I was fired from a major corporation I had been working for a number of years, and the stray cat came to the door and came to stay.
Oh.
His name was Finley. I got his name from a baby name book. Finley means small, brave, fair-haired one.
Oh.
He's an orange kitty, and he was so smart. I thought, took some patience, but I told him to walk on a leash, on a string, you know. We walk up and down the street, basically just keeping out of trouble. But such a smart cat, and that cat brought so much joy to my life. It was just remarkable.
Mm. Jackie, thank you so much for sharing that. Mm. I love it. They find us, don't they?
Yeah, at just the right time. He lost his job, and mm-hmm. he found his kitty.
Yep.
Greg in Menominee, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Greg.
I'm one of these guys that never got real close to an animal, and people would, you know, let's face it, they complain about everything, and I would always say, well, bullets are cheap, but I got retired and forcefully, and my wife says you can't be home alone all the time, so she got me a little, it's called a teddy bear, and it was just, you know, just right age. Now I've had it 4 years, and I'm telling you, I can't believe I ever said that to anybody.
It's a dog, Greg?
I could not. It makes me sick just thinking of something happened to him. I couldn't. I don't know if I could live without the little fart.
Is it a dog?
It's a dog?
He is.
Is it a dog, Greg?
Yes, it's called a teddy bear.
A teddy bear dog.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah, they come into our lives and they steal our hearts, don't they?
Yeah, they do indeed. Thanks, Greg, so much. And how about your daughters? What do they have a relationship with your... you have more than a dog, I guess, from what I read in the book. Do they have a great relationship, too, with animals?
They do. They want every animal. Every animal we drive by. I want a llama. I want a cow. So we have my older daughter was walking home from school one day and saw a kitten up in a tree, and she was on a mission to get that kitten, and we couldn't get it, and it spent the night there, and the next day we went and got it, and it was covered in fleas and emaciated. It was probably 3 weeks old, and we took it and, you know, got it taken care of, and it is her cat and lives in her room and sleeps on her head. And, you know, that's the kind of connection I think that is really helpful for, you know, she's a preteen now. So it's nice she has him.
Julie, thanks so much for being with us. Thanks for writing the book.
Thank you so much for having me, Kathleen. It's been a real pleasure.
Julie Barton, the book is Dog Medicine, How My Dog Saved Me From Myself. And thanks for all of your calls. Really touching calls, everybody. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour and to Scotty Myers for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Julie's going to be in Milwaukee at Boswell on Friday at 7 o'clock in case you'd like to see that video that she talked about. And we'll post it when she gets finished with her tour because it'd be nice to see Bunker and Julie doing training work together. Thanks for listening. News is coming up.